Hey, this is Chris Osborne, and I am here with a very good, very old friend, Clifford Jones, in his office in London, and we are talking about Vaca y Morella, a concept he has started and is working on, and it is a very meaty one indeed. So, hello, Clifford.
Hi.
Yes, so we just got the recorder on, but we're going to just continue talking as we were, and we were talking about the concept, how you came to it, so...
Okay. It's a strange thing. About 25 years ago, I started to visit Galicia in Spain, and I discovered that Galicia is the home of some of the finest beef on the planet. Mm-hmm. It's also some of the most expensive, second to Kobe or Wagyu beef.
Okay.
So I wondered, how could I go and try this? Where could I buy it from? And yet no restaurants sold it. No butchers would sell it.
In Galicia.
In Galicia. And I went and asked around, and they said, no, it all goes to Madrid or to overseas. I thought, well, this is crazy. Are there people not wealthy enough around here to afford it themselves? And they said, no, it's just a closed shop. It's a way that the cows are so limited, the numbers that they can produce, that they are bought before they even culled, and they are shipped off as quickly as possible to get the maximum price.
Okay.
So, with this in mind, it planted a seed, and I've been thinking about this for many years, and I just went and watched the various parts of agriculture in Galicia starting to disappear. And I noticed that the European Union had made it almost impossible for micro-agriculture to produce products and to sell them, because of the restrictions and because of the testing that was necessary for the sanitary requirements of the EU. And of course, someone who only produces three cheeses a week cannot possibly go and afford to go and have their product tested, because the testing would be their profit for an entire year.
Right, okay.
And so slowly, we've seen disappearance from the local markets of butter, cream, you know, and many other products, and including these meats as well. And yet they still seem to be finding their way to large markets or rich markets across Europe. So with this in mind, I've taken on some thoughts as to how I could possibly help this situation, you know, and to create a business that could produce something which was not just good for the business, but also good for the local producers as well.
Okay.
So by selling their products for them, on behalf of them, but creating a cooperative, as it were, so that we can test their products, okay, across the board, and then sell them under our brand, seemed to be the right way of doing this.
Okay. So just to establish a few things about why this is so important and special, and for people who might not know, Galicia is northwest Spain. If you're looking at a map, it's that bit that hangs over Portugal.
That's correct.
And maybe different than a lot of people's concepts of Spain. It's very green.
It's verdant.
Yeah, okay. Yes. And obviously I've been with you actually a couple times, and it is lovely. So what makes that such a great place for beef? Why is beef from there so good?
I think it's the breed. Okay. It's first of all, it's exceptional. It's a Rubia Gallega.
Okay.
And the second one is a Capriccio di Oro.
Okay.
And these two particular breeds are incredible. They are dairy cows, and they get milked until 5 years old, and then they're retired. And it's at that point of retirement that suddenly they become something completely different. They change from being a dairy cow into being a meat cow. Mm-hmm. And the quality of the meat at the age of 12 or 13 years is exceptional, which of course nobody else is ever willing to go and keep a cow for that long.
Right.
And obviously, the cost of doing so is ridiculous. For a smallholder to go and keep maybe two cows maximum,
right,
and to keep them for that many years, fed on grass and then obviously silage or hay in the winter, is insane. And what they get back, obviously, is it has to go and reflect how long they've been kept, which is why they're so expensive and so special.
Okay, okay. And there's not a lot of it?
There isn't.
And maybe Madrid, people in Madrid have been clued on to this for a long time, and now more recently, London restaurants and chefs, blah, 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 and it's all just going out of
indeed
Galicia.
Again, so of course it's the same old problem whereby once the market starts demanding this thing and this product, it goes and takes it away from the very place it's from.
Okay, yeah.
And what we've tried to do is to think of other ways as to try to, you know, to bridge that gap, as it were.
And who's we?
Okay, so my partner, Silvia Garcia.
Okay.
Okay.
Who's from
Galicia. Okay, who's a Galician. Okay. Has a an interest in this. She comes from a marketing background, but also from a farming background equally.
Okay. Oh, very cool.
So.
I know her. She is lovely. And what is your connection to this? Because clearly you're as British as they come, and I mean that is the highest compliment. What is your connection to
My wife is Galician.
Okay.
And I started to go there, as I say, 25 years ago. And my love of food just went and made me curious as to what is it? What is it about this place that seems almost forgotten? It's a part of Spain that no one really visits unless you're a devout Catholic wanting to go to Santiago. But apart from that, it doesn't get much tourism. And yet it goes and has some of the finest foods in the whole of Spain.
Yeah. I get a lot of like the Percebes that go to the Basque Country and to Madrid. They come from Galicia.
Indeed. It's the same with the seafood. It's the same with almost everything.
Yeah.
I get that they produce all goes to other places to be sold for far greater values than they can realize in their own place.
Okay. And so you touched on a point, micro agriculture. So that's sort of like a family farm, that sort of thing. And that's being squeezed out, you think?
Well, the farms still exist. Okay. They're about half the size of a football pitch. Okay. And that's and that's before someone passes away. And then it tends to get split into two or even three. And then they just become smaller and smaller and smaller with time. And to produce something there economically, it's just not viable to do so.
Yeah.
And that is the issue. Traditionally, it would be three pigs, okay, two sheep, okay, two cows, and maybe six chickens.
Okay.
And that was your lot, as it were. And these parcelas, or parcels of land, were given out by the church in the about 200, 300 years ago.
Okay, okay. And your idea is to be a collective for them, so you manage.
We manage what they can produce. We also try to encourage them to produce what we can sell.
Okay.
On their behalf.
Which would be high quality artisanal traditional products.
Indeed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
To Galicians, to people in Santiago.
And further, and further afield as well.
Okay.
Okay. If we can, but mainly it's to the Galicians who are almost forgetting about what is on their own doorstep.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you think that's changing at all?
I think it is. Okay. Yeah.
And what indications?
We are noticing things like food trucks. Okay. Street food. Okay, farmers markets are now starting to open up. Organic produce is also starting to become more and more common as well.
Okay.
All of these little clues which we saw in Britain in the last 20 years have now started to go and occur there.
Okay.
And that's very common.
Yeah.
From music and fashion, it takes a few years to get to Galicia.
Sure. Okay.
Well, it's the same with food as well.
All right, okay, yeah. But there's, from my experience in Santiago, this year, there's a fantastic, small, but fantastic dining scene. I mean, you've got these great little bars and taverns doing the rustic traditional stuff. And then you have like Casa Marcelo and these restaurants doing amazing things. One of the only Michelin star restaurants, the only Michelin star restaurant
in Santiago
de Compostela.
Yeah. Indeed. Certainly, what has happened since the crisis is that Galicia is a land of restaurants. In fact, there's so many restaurants, you have so much choice, you don't know which one to go to. And that's one of the issues, because they all used to go and have specialities I get of the mm-hmm. house, and they all would do something, one thing, which was fantastic. What has happened, though, since the crisis, is that they've had to reduce their overheads, reduce the quality of what they're purchasing, and certainly stop purchasing from the local suppliers as well. So they can get cheaper tomatoes, which are grown in the south of Spain. They can get cheaper peppers from, you know, elsewhere. And their meat, I get, tends to go and come from, you know, from Central Europe even, right, because the price is so much lower. What that's done is reduce the quality. And the problem with that is if you have too many restaurants selling substandard food, it has really destroyed that kind of culinary, you know, wonder, which is what Galicia was all about 20 years ago.
Okay, so it's changed that quickly, relatively, yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, and so you would be supplying restaurants with these artisanal products and great beef.
What has happened from this is a backlash.
Yes, okay.
So obviously you have a reaction to this, and people are starting to wake up to the fact of, hang on, where
that
is
used
my
to taste better. Yeah.
Where is my food from? Yeah. Hang on a second. This tastes like my grandmother used to make it. And oh my God, this product, which I haven't seen for the last 20 years, is suddenly available mm-hmm. again. So people are becoming more educated about their food, where it's from. And it is, as you say, where you've seen the same thing in almost every European country.
Sure.
Okay. Evolving over the last, as I say, 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what does vaca y morella mean?
Okay, so vaca is...
And how did you come upon this name, yeah?
Okay, so vaca is a cow, and morella is a local term for a cow.
So vaca is the Spanish, okay. Castellan...
It's
yeah,
more the
word,
Galician
yeah.
term for this particular type of cow called the Gallega Rubia.
Okay, so but in Galicia, the local lingo, it would be a morella.
A morella.
Okay.
Okay. So from this, we went and found an understanding with local people, whereby calling your brand Morella went and gave some connection to them, especially to their childhood.
Okay.
Because I believe that Morella used to be a cartoon character in the 1960s in Galicia. So, and they connect with this and they like the name. What we're trying to achieve is to go and start selling these artisanal products, these handmade things, which we can now go and supply to restaurants to start with, mm-hmm. and then we have
okay.
to supply to the people as well.
Very good. And how far along are you? And
oh, crikey. It's now been 3 years since we started the company, and it's slow. It's a slow process, okay? Spain and Galicia, of course, things don't happen overnight. They take time.
Okay. You seem patient about it.
I have to be patient. It's the only way to be.
All right.
Okay. Galicians also have a deep mistrust of other Galicians.
Okay.
And they tend to go and prefer to see people from outside coming in and making the most of their resources, which is an unusual concept and something unique to Galicia.
Yeah, okay. And I know, just from personal experience, talking with you and being with you there, you love the place. You're an honorary Gallego, aren't you? I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah, okay,
they love me, I love them.
Okay.
And certainly they love the fact that I really get what they're about and what they're trying to do and what they're trying to produce there, which is being forgotten.
Okay.
And that's...
So long-term strategy, you see yourself more there than here or anywhere else in the future?
I would say yes.
Okay.
My point is to help Galicians, okay? And I want them to rediscover their past, and through that, the sale of our meat, okay, to promote this, has been a goal that we're trying to achieve. And that's by selling those meats in London, but also the rest of Europe, okay? But primarily to go and sell it to Galicians in Galicia.
Sure.
Okay.
How do you source these the meat? How do you find it? I mean,
well,
you just know a guy who knows a guy,
I,
or you drive around looking for the right
I'm afraid in Galicia, it's you need to know a guy.
Okay,
that's okay. How it works.
Okay.
And for years and years, this has been the issue, because the guy who knew all the guys was the person who was exporting Lidl's products.
Okay.
It is now starting to open up, because obviously the price, I guess, has meant that it's becoming more commercial. However, it can't be commercial because the limited production and because the bureaucracy that you can encounter when you're trying to do business in Galicia and in Spain.
Yeah. So from my experience here in London, as a food writer and also as just a guy walking down the street, I'm starting to see Galician beef at, you know, street food places, little lunch spots. How can you, a consumer in London, know that you're getting the right thing, the good thing?
Simply, you can't.
Okay.
Until
you taste it.
There is a thing in Galicia whereby any animal which goes and arrives in Galicia and lives there for 3 months becomes Galician.
Okay.
In fact, it's easier for a cow to get a passport in Galicia than it is for a person.
Okay.
So, you could take an elephant, and literally go and so long as it's gone and, you know, eaten and been fed in Galicia for 3 months, it becomes Galician.
So they're like, I can imagine like these huge feedlots wherever in Europe. These cows, hormones, all this stuff, and then last 3 months there in some horrible conditions in Galicia. Then
Galician
beef. Yeah.
And then it can be sold as Galician beef. And this is the issue. What you need to know is the origin of this. It's all about traceability. And so there are certain restaurants which can have that traceability and some that don't. And what you need to be asking for, again, is this Rubia Gallega, which is the breed, or Capriccio di Oro. And with that in mind, you can then kind of move on. And is this breed being reared in Galicia? Has it grown up in Galicia? Mm-hmm. And has it been, fed in Galicia as well?
And it's, you can also tell by the way it looks, right? Like if you get a cut.
For sure.
It means sort of like a colored fat around it.
Well, the easiest way to determine most beef is the color of the fat. So if it has a yellow fat, you know that it's been reared indoors, or finished, as they say. So for the last 2 or 3 months of its life, it's been kept indoors and being fed grain. Okay. Mm. If it's been grass fed, it tends to have a whiter fat.
Okay.
And that is something that you really want to look for. The quality really is, if you can see a white fat, and the thing about these breeds is there's a lot of fat, and that's where the flavor comes from. That and the marbling through the meat.
Okay.
Also, it's about the cut of the meat as well. Would I eat rump? Or sirloin? Or would I go and eat a fillet? No, I wouldn't.
From these cows, okay.
Yeah, just from these particular cows, because the quality cut that you're looking for is the chuleton.
Okay.
And the chuleton, or the chuleta, is the rib. And that is the eye of the rib, and you will always spot it because it should have this deep marbling, and it should go and have a fat content, which is almost equal, to the quantity of meat.
And it's similar but slightly different from like a prime rib.
Well, most prime rib in this country, in Britain, is served off the bone. The thing about Spanish beef is that chuletons are served on the bone, as it were. They are cutlets. That's what chuleton means.
Okay.
It's a cutlet.
Okay. Cool. So long-term plans, you're going to be...
Well,
you tell me.
Okay. We currently go and supply 3 restaurants, in the UK, with our meat from Spain. However, we're trying to find something which is more environmentally friendly, and B, more commercial, because to keep a cow for 12 to 13 years is just not viable. So what we've attempted to do is to go and start to take our Dexter, which comes from our farm in Devon.
Okay. So you have a farming background with your family here in Devon, yeah.
Indeed.
Okay.
And so from taking that Dexter, we are looking to start a breeding program. I get in Spain. And this is to produce a meat which is only at 30 months. Okay, and for me, the quality of that meat is very close to what they are producing in Galicia. But of course, it's a quarter of the time to produce it. There's also the whole issue of hanging and dry aging of meat, which in Spain isn't something which is so common. And that's due to the temperature. Okay, nobody used to hang meat. You know, it tends to be 14 days maximum and then it's sold. And that has been an issue, but obviously with refrigeration and dry storage units or cámaras, as they call them in Spain, it is now possible for them to go and age their meat and to go and produce a far better taste and texture, okay, to their product.
Okay.
But it's slow coming. It's caught on in the large cities, but in the countryside and in Galicia, it's still fairly unknown. This is really the key. A 30-month-old Dexter, which is hung for 52 days, okay, I can assure you, is so exceptional that it really rivals this product, which takes 12 years.
What makes Dexter so great? It's a small breed,
well,
right?
Well, because it's a small breed. So the first thing is it goes and has a small impact on the ground. So in the winter, when it rains, which it happens almost 200 days of the year, again, Galicia, it goes and doesn't mess up the field. It doesn't go and destroy the grass. It's able to stay outside far longer than the heavier breeds of cow. And the quality of the meat is exceptional. Okay. Small is beautiful.
Small is beautiful. Okay. Oh, right. Okay. And you want to talk a little bit about the restaurants here in the UK that you're already working with? Or,
okay. So
highlight any of that?
So at the moment, we've been supplying just recently Kitty Fishers in Mayfair.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Okay. We have some of the Rubia Gallega and the Capriccio di Oro.
Mm-hmm.
And also we've been supplying Jerome. Okay, he's a friend. Okay, who has Le Wafu in Edinburgh. So,
and it is a fantastic, fantastic restaurant.
It certainly is, and it's very nice for me to go and supply a friend as well because he understands what we're after.
And just so people know, it opened not even a year ago. It's already won best new restaurant in Scotland for 2017.
Indeed.
Yeah. Take that away
if you can.
Keep that in your mind. Yeah.
The only issue here is that he's a restaurateur. He's not a steakhouse.
Right? Sure. Yeah.
So for me to want to go and send him full Alto Lomo, which is basically a 15-kilo entire rib of beef, is something which is an extravagance for him.
Okay.
And something which he cannot do on a regular basis.
Sure.
And I think that is actually a great metaphor for how one should eat steak.
Okay. It should be a treat, right?
Indeed. It's not something that should go and be on the menu every night. It's not something that you should go and eat three times a week. It's something that once a month you should eat, and it should be the best.
Yes.
Nothing less.
Great provenance, great quality.
And traceability, so you know where it's from, what it's eaten, okay, and how it lived.
A lot of things are like that. Maybe salmon's a really good example.
I think so, yeah.
It used to be such a treat, and you paid for it, but you enjoyed it, and now everybody is expecting salmon all the time, everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the high street supermarket, you get the little salmon sushi, and it just tastes like crap, and it is crap.
Yeah.
And it's not appreciated anymore. It's diluted, yeah.
I see salmon as being overtaken by sea trout. Okay. Sea trout will become the new salmon.
All right.
Okay, whereby this will then be farmed to death.
Okay,
and the flavor will go and be so diluted from what the real thing is that it will be the same story as what happened to salmon.
Okay. Well, we were talking about beef. Now we're talking about salmon. So maybe we've come to the end of our conversation. If people are interested in what we're talking about here, is there a way to get in touch with you or look up Vacca e Morella?
The simplest thing is just to look out for our name.
Okay, and that's Vacca. Y-M-A-R-E-L-A, Morella. Okay. And you've got an online presence and
indeed,
things like that. Okay, fantastic. Well, anything else, Clifford?
Well, what I'd like to go and say is that it's not just about beef, okay? It's about so much more than that. And beef is just something which was the first thing that we went and came across. But with time, we've discovered that there is so much more. After the Second World War in the UK, so many breeds of animal were reduced in such quantities to produce more efficient quantities of meat, okay? And rightly so, because this country was starving. But it was at the expense of difference and of choice. And to a certain extent, this is what's happened since the time of Franco, okay, in Spain. And they are suffering from the same way. So in this country, we have, what, I think it's 30 different types of pig, okay?
I'll take your word for it. Okay.
Yeah, and possibly even more types of chicken.
There's the Weinstein.
Okay, yeah.
The Franken.
Yeah, yeah, and it goes on and on.
No, that's my country, sorry.
Okay, that's it. Whereas in Spain, okay, if you go to Galicia, they have two types of pig, okay? Three types of cow, rather, and one type of chicken. And it's just like watching history repeating itself. And it's like it's waking up from this slumber and realizing that all of these things that used to be available, you know, 50 years ago, just have disappeared. But with some help and some assistance from the rest of Europe, it's going to be possible to put it back.
Okay.
To how it should be.
How it should be. All right. Well, thank you very much, sir.
It's my
pleasure. I love talking with you, and I think this sounded great, so thanks.
Okay.
All right.
All the best.